Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. There's a new music video player on the TV scene, Loop TV. Be in the loop about this venture when co-founder and former MTV executive Andy Schoen joins me next. Later this hour, we'll spotlight a new sketch comedy effort, the Eliza Sell Singer Sketch Show on Netflix. Director Laura Murphy will come on board. Also ahead, News No Quickies, our classic trivia question, and a milestone for a special audience Sunday night is our show to know. Hey everyone, I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised, brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get 3 free books when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Good to have you with us on this Friday afternoon, first one of April 2020, for the program All About Television. 50 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. 2 great guests coming your way in the hour ahead. We invite you to be interactive with us. All it takes is a phone call from you. So pick up the phone, dial in, and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. And our chat room is once again in business for you. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk, Spreaker, or TuneIn screen, follow the instructions of other people live with you. Andy Schoen is live with us from Beverly Hills, California, IA, after this group of News Note quickies. Viacom CBS wrapped up its deal for 49% of Miramax. BN Media Group retained the rest. Price, $375 million. The third day, the HBO miniseries with Jude Law, set to premiere May 1st, has postponed that launch this fall. Specific date to be announced. National Geographic will put together a Jane Goodall birthday special at the 22nd. That, of course, is Earth Day. Ellen DeGeneres and Wendy Williams' respective daytime series will return with new episodes on Monday. CMT will move its annual music awards to October, again, specific date to be determined. And Broke, whose showrunner, Alex Hirschlag, was on this program Monday afternoon, had more than 7 million people watching its opening episode last night on CBS. That's the largest audience for a comedy series debut so far this season on broadcast television. Again, if you want to hear the interview with Alex, all you have to do is go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, or check out the podcast version on iTunes, Apple TV, Speaker Podcast app, TuneIn.com, and iHeartRadio.com. And that is News Notes for today. My first guest has had music video be a major part of his career. At one point, he's one of the key executives of both MTV and VH1, also at Revolt. And now he is the co-founder and advisor to the newest music video service on the planet, Loop TV, currently available on Android Fire TV, on Roku, and Android TV smart set models. Joining us live from Beverly Hills, California, an Inner Radio exclusive, we welcome back Andy Schoen. Andy, welcome in.
Hey, Simon, how are you?
Very, very fine, thank you. So what's it like for you to be back in the music video field?
Well, first I have to say, Simon, that I love the top of the hour and you giving me the current weather in New York. You know, I've been broadcasting live since before I could drive a car. You know, I got into the business doing live radio in my hometown, and I rode that all the way up through the major markets in the U.S. and through Infinity and CBS to Viacom and MTV, and that's how I got into the music business. So I'll just tell you that it's 63 degrees currently here in Beverly Hills. In my closet, It's about 69. Maybe 70, when I'm broadcasting from my closet. So it's good to speak with you. Thanks for having me.
We all seem to be broadcasting from our closets these days, given what's going on with the coronavirus.
The acoustics.
The acoustics are,
I came in here, but I have a hardwood floor in my closet. I'm thinking I need to put up some, I have been doing some podcast work for my other company called Speaker, S-P-K-R, in here. So I've got a mixer and a mic in here. So I'm actually back to my roots, my craft. I've got my canvas and my paints out.
By the way, is that Speaker? That's our Blog Talk Radio affiliate. Is that correct?
No, Speaker is S-P-K-R. That's another business that I'm the co-founder and CEO of. That takes small pieces of I don't want to take any loop time away, but takes excerpts of podcasts, puts them together elegantly, and in radio form and pushes the content out to people and mixes it together with music and other things, solves discovery, and it's in the iOS App Store, SPKR. Anyway.
We might want to talk about
that's
this.
That's a bumper. That's my sponsorship bumper. Okay, sure.
Oh.
Yeah, well, for another time. Yeah.
Okay.
You got it.
You got it.
Happy
All
year.
Right. So talk about Loop TV. It's been around now for about a couple of weeks. How did it get formed?
It's really the dream of John Nierman, who is the co-founder and CEO, and a terrific guy who has a storied career at the top of a number of big global media companies. He loved the music video format, like me, grew up with MTV and music videos. Long before I was the head of programming at MTV in New York, I was a teenager experiencing it for the first time, just like, you know, many of us. And so he fits in that same category. We're about the same age. And as he was looking for the next thing to do, he was looking at opportunities within in the digital space and on mobile and OTT, and realizing that there was some white space, that music video was kind of underserved from a curatorial and editorial point of view. And we met, and it's funny. I'm sort of I liken this to being kind of like an Apollo astronaut. You know, I go back to MTV and then was at VH1 as well as head of programming, created MTV2, launched a music television channel called IMF for Universal Music Group. And then, of course, I have Revolt TV, which is the largest independent music channel in the U.S., which I have with Sean Diddy Combs. So pretty much every time somebody wants to do something with music video, they find their way to me. And I always say, that's it. I'm not doing it ever again. And then they say, you want to go to the moon one more time? And I say, okay, you know, let's do it. And so that's the same here with Loop. I got excited about it. I love the music video format. I love helping artists to express themselves and to build their careers and to connect them with their audiences. And I think it's more difficult than ever at the peak of on demand for video and audio with millions of choices. There's this paradox of choice, right? And so at that point, I feel like things out there like Pluto TV, you know, a lot of these ad-supported, you know, more curated products that are coming to the market are going to be welcome for consumers. There's plenty of, you know, if you know exactly what you want, then that's great. But for a lot of people who just want to be in the mood to watch videos when they're working out, or they have a particular genre they're interested in, or they want to discover new things, then I think there's room for a strong, curated, editorialized platform like Loop.
If you have a question or comment for Andy, put it in the room and make the call, 646-652-2906. When people who have Andy
Simon,
TV,
Simon, I'm compelled to, whenever you say that, I feel like I grew up listening to Larry King, you know, and he would come on and say, Buffalo, New York, you're on the air. You have a question for us. I just love it. So, yeah, let's take some calls.
Hello.
Let's take some calls, Simon.
Yeah.
Exactly. Anyway.
Anyway, absolutely. Andy, so when people turn on Loop TV, whether they have Amazon Fire TV, they have Roku, or they have a TV set with Android TV as the operating system, Sony says have others one do, what kind of music videos do they see, and how are the videos arranged?
Well, you know, what's happened since sort of the peak of MTV is that music videos went online, and people would have to kind of hunt and peck for them, search for them. And music videos are the original short form content. You know, that's and I built my career taking short form elements and sewing them together into, you know, a full product, something that people could sit back and enjoy. And like I said, there's plenty of room for search based short form consumption, but there's also, I think, plenty of room for services that do a lot of the work for you and put it together. And that's what Loop will do for you in channels by genre and by mood. So maybe you're going to jump on the treadmill, as you should if you're self-quarantined, and you could, watch a workout channel. You know, imagine that sort of a thing.
By the way, speaking of work, if you did not hear the news, Peloton is now a smart TV programming service. I believe it is on Apple TV and maybe on other smart TV services before. So the idea of a workout channel, which has long been talked about, and something like Peloton doing it, maybe a winner, maybe a big winner.
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's challenging to scale dramatically if you're Peloton by selling hardware. I think they're realizing the same thing Apple realized. You can sell a lot of hardware, but you also having a subscription service and that recurring revenue and being able to expand beyond the hardware is a great opportunity and great growth trajectory for sure.
The music video service we're talking about today is Loop TV. It is available on Amazon Fire TV, on Roku, and on TV sets that have Android TV as the operating system. And we've got the co-founder advisor to the service with us, Andy Schoen. If the name is familiar, he was one of the major players at MTV Networks with MTV and VH1 and MTV2. Also was involved with the Sean Diddy-backed service, Revolt, which is still going on cable systems all over the place. Andy joins us live from Beverly Hills, California this half hour. On Tomorrow will be televised. Finally, I'm with you live from New York, 50 degrees at the top of the hour here in NYC. If you have a question or a comment for Andy, read it in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We have a pair of 98 episodes coming your way next week. On Monday, we'll kick it off with the folks behind the popular Hulu series Future Man, whose third and final season premiered earlier today. We'll have Kyle Hunter and Aria Shepherd. They are the two creators of the show, also executive producers, plus executive producer Ben Carlin. And then, Dean Devlin, the person that brought you Leverage and The Librarians on TNT, he's back with a new series that was shot in the Philippines. It's on WGN America. It premiered Monday night. It's called Almost Paradise, and Dean Devlin will be with us. And finally, we'll get the offer of a great new book called Alternative Channels, Queer Images on 20th Century TV. His name is Kevin Capsudo. He was also the technical consultant on the critically acclaimed Apple TV Plus series Visible out on television, dealing with the same subject. And we're going to offer alternate channels as a classic trivia question prize with an author's book starting on Monday. So catch our guest Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Any thoughts yet about how the service is doing so far? I know it's early in the game, but are you hearing any feedback from viewers?
No, I think it's, you know, the goal now is to get it out there, start gathering feedback. It's really too early to talk about any metrics.
In terms of you mentioned that people are not only getting specific channels by genre, like pop, hard rock, world music, country music, et cetera, but they're also getting by mood. How do you put a channel together by mood?
Well, that's what, you know, I love packaging music and presenting it in different compelling ways. And the folks at Loop TV share that passion with me. I think that it's, you know, pushing boundaries and creating something that is unexpected from the users, from the viewers, is where the magic comes from. I mean, I think that, you know, one of the things that I always say about show business entertainment is you really don't want to give people what they want. You want to give people what you think they might like based on what you know about them, because then that creates some surprise and delight. You know, that's kind of the magic of a curated service, is you don't know exactly what you're going to get next, but it's in the ballpark, right? It's in the lane. So, you know, what we endeavor to do when we create mood-based programming, or, you know, a channel that is based on a theme or something, is to be creative and just think about, you know, what kind of mood it sets, what kind of, you know, it has to do with tempo. And quite frankly, what we're also doing is looking at, because it's a visual medium, in some cases, what the audio sounds like coming out of a mood-based channel or a genre-based channel, but also visually, can we do things visually with the channels as well, which is, I'm having a lot of fun with that.
Speaking of visuals, one of the things that made MTV tick during its first decade in the 1980s was the idea that you never knew what kind of music video was going to happen. And it wasn't just the artists, it was the fact that because of techniques like choreography, storyline, computer graphics, animation, weird special effects, that the music video took on an art form. It took on being its own genre of entertainment. Where is we talked about this earlier. Where is this art form at right now? Is it still trying to expand and do things in a, do things uniquely, or is it sort of settled into a pattern?
Well, I mean, Simon, you know, when I was at MTV, and you know, if you go back, and I mean, just the quick history of the medium is that when MTV launched in 1981, when I dug a trench in my parents' backyard in Reno, Nevada, so that we could have cable, because our house did not come with cable, I convinced my parents to let us tear up the backyard so that we could get MTV, because like every teenager, we were obsessed with getting it. And then a steady flow of Doritos and Pepsi entered our bodies, and we had the TV on for the rest of time after that. You know, and at that time, you knew every video. You know, there were about 20 Rod Stewart videos, right? And some, you know, there was not a lot of content, but all of us knew all of the videos. And then as time progressed, by the time 10 years later, I got to MTV, you know, I was hired from Los Angeles, from the top music station in America, to be the head of programming at MTV, because the novelty of music videos, Tom Freston sort of famously said, had worn off. And they were looking for new inspiration and ways to package it. And that's when I came in. The videos were becoming bigger and more important than ever, but getting people to watch them was becoming a challenge because there were more and more TV channels. And it's a short form medium. So imagine trying to program short form, you know, shows, 12 shows an hour versus strong narrative programming that was on other channels. So every time you change a video, it's an opportunity for someone to tune out. So we had to become strong packagers of the music. And that is why things like MTV Jams and Alternative Nation and The Beach House and Beavis and Butthead, all of those things came from the desire on our part to package the music and what we called smoke and mirrors long form, which was to take short form videos and make it feel like a full length program. And so at that time, though, music videos had budgets sometimes in excess of $1 million. A music video on MTV in my day in heavy rotation could spark sales of 1 million copies of an album, if you can believe it, you know, in the premiere week of the debut week of a record. So it was such a powerful time. And we could get the entire country to wait until Thursday night at 8 o'clock for a premiere of a 4-minute music video from Madonna or Michael Jackson or Guns N' Roses. That was the peak in the 90s. The power of MTV was the analog Facebook. There was nothing else like it, and there will never be anything else ever again like it. It was the consolidation of that power and audience that allowed that to happen. In the time since the peak of MTV, music videos went online. And to places first, Yahoo was the place where music videos kind of first went in the early 2000s. And they were really the platform for them. And then Vevo. And then, you know, they've sort of been online. And YouTube is now where a lot of people go for music videos to find them individually, you know, individual clips. Music videos are still a big, important part of the marketing of artists at the record company level. And artists still make them. And they're still important. Very few of them are big budget productions anymore. They still exist with the larger artists. But I think that there's so much entrepreneurialism and creativity and technology today that allows music artists to express themselves and beyond performances. And maybe today, as we see, you know, as we're quarantined and artists can't go out and perform as much, that they'll turn back to music video as a way of expressing themselves and connecting with their audiences visually. And I certainly hope so.
Andy Sharon is our guest this half hour on Lobby Televised, the former key executive at MTV, VH1, and Revolt. He's now the co-founder and advisor of the newest music video service on the planet, Loop TV. It's available to you on smart TV sets and devices, so far Amazon Fire TV, Android TV operating system sets, and Roku, with more to come. And also, there's some other ways that the service is also going to come through in the months to come. We'll talk about that shortly. Andy Sharon is live from Beverly Hills, California, this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Good to have you with us on this Friday afternoon. We all need a great weekend. We hope we can get it. And we are pulling, that we are licking this pandemic sooner than later. So let's hang in there. Follow the guidelines. And we will get through this together. We're all in it together, and that's the important thing. If a question or comment for Andy or Mini Mitch with him, make the phone ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Friday on Swabby Televised, we have another 90-minute show in store for you. We'll kick it off with Nancy Pingator. She is putting together a service that started a couple weeks ago called Players TV. It features famous sports stars doing their thing off the court. And we'll talk about the whole idea of sports stars like LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Dwayne Wade, Steph Curry, all forming their own production companies and where that is going to go. And then, while Wayne Brady is waiting for a new season of Let's Make a Deal, believe it or not, he has a new series that just started on BYU-TV, Brigham University's national cable channel. It's called Comedy IQ. We'll talk with the two prospective producers, Michelle Collins and Kevin Dill. And finally, from the Nickelodeon series Danger Force, the spinoff of Henry Danger, creator executive producer Christopher Nowak. It's all coming up Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Somali Televised. Andy, how are people getting the word out that Loop TV is available?
Well, one of the things that I think we should mention is that that Loop TV is also part of it's a multi-platform ecosystem. So one of the other aspects, I think one of the great funnels for Loop will be its extensive network of out-of-home channels. There are, there's a proliferation of screens out there, flat screens that are all over retail stores, restaurants, bars, hospitality, hotels, casinos, and things like that. And Loop is in there in many locations already providing music video channels. And so that's one of the ways that we can kind of be sneaky about this, right? You're in a bar or restaurant or a hotel or a casino or, a retail location, you're seeing the Loop brand, you're seeing the content, you're seeing the opportunity to, to go and grab it on another platform and to take it out of the store with you, essentially. So that's certainly one of the ways, a key, one of the pillars of the business is to be out where people are and presenting music video that way. It's an underserved market, and it's the Loop product for retailers and for restaurants and bars and things is extraordinary. The platform that's been built that is plug and play for out of home for those retailers and hospitality is fantastic. There's kind of never been anything else like it in the space. And so that is a strong way to get into the market and to show people the Loop brand and then have them, put it in their pocket and watch it at home on their Fire Stick or whatever.
Now, it's also going to be on mobile, on smartphones. When is the smartphone service going to start?
Yeah, that's the app is fantastic. I mean, I've been playing around with it. It's in beta now, and the launch of that is imminent.
So, Andy, before you leave us, where do you see this service going over the next few years? Do you see it pretty much staying music videos, or do you see, like you were talking about when you were at MTV, creating special shows that incorporate music videos into the program?
I think where it grows is I think that the success of Loop comes from its ability to connect artists with their fans and to connect Loop with audiences. And you don't just do that by being a utility and just pumping out videos. So the growth will be in putting our arms around the content with personalities, being creative, and really growing, something that's tangible that people want to keep accessing and making a part of their daily lives. You do that with personalities, with packaging, with creativity and partnerships. And I think that's how you'll see it grow.
The service is called Loop TV. It's music videos, all sorts of genres, all sorts of moods. And you can find it right now on Amazon Fire TV, on Roku, and on TV sets that have Android TV as their operating system, Sony being one of the major brands. For more details about the service online, here's where you go, loop.tv, L-O-O-P, Loop. TV. Loop TV, now available on smart TV sets and devices and many, many more to come down the road. Andy, Sean, thank you again for joining us. Good luck with the service, you and your fellow folks putting it together, and we'd love to have you back soon. And let's talk about your speaker service. Maybe we can find a way to get some Marvy Toe guys involved.
I would love to do that. Signing off from my closet in Beverly Hills, it's currently 63 degrees in Beverly Hills.
Oh, love it, love
everybody
it, love
stay
it,
safe.
Andy.
We'll talk to you later.
You too. Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye.
You got it. Bye-bye now. Andy Schoen joining us live from his closet in Beverly Hills, California. And incidentally, we're going to be doing a Media Village story on Loop TV. We'll be writing it over the weekend and following it on Monday, and hopefully we'll be coming out on MediaVillage.com in the next week or so. We're going to have a Cracker Trivia question of the week coming your way shortly, but first, we have a little message for the fine folks at Audible.com. If you're an Oprah's Book Club person, you know that one of Oprah's latest selections is a goodie called American Dirt by Jeannie Cummings, and you can get it right now as part of your one-month trial in Audible.com. Now, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. There's nearly 200,000 titles to choose from, and you listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing this on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or iHeartRadio, if you're at TuneIn Radio, too. And all you got to do is sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. You get 3 free audiobooks, 1 month trial, and great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. And get this, 2 of your audiobooks come from the growing selection of Audible Originals, original audio productions, the best of Broadway, off-Broadway, regional theater, and great one-woman and one-man performances. So make this weekend, let's say, be the weekend, especially when you're dealing with the coronavirus. Make this the weekend that you discover how Audible.com can transform the way you hear the world. For that one-month trial, 3 free audiobooks, get for yourself or those you love, audibletrial.com/televised. Well, now it's time for our Cracker Trivia question of the week, and this is the final episode that we're going to offer our current question, which we've had since a week ago Monday. And here's the question. Name the 1950s sitcom co-starring Natalie Wood. That's right, before Natalie was into films like Rebel Without a Cause as a teenager, and after she was a child star in films like America on 34th Street, for 1 year in the 1950s, she was a co-star on a weekly situation comedy. By the way, the episodes of that comedy are available at YouTube.com. And I'll give you another hint. Another co-star was, believe it or not, Faye Ray. That's right, the Faye Ray of King Kong fame. So, if you know the answer, email me, SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. It's SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. And if you're first with the correct answer, you win a marvelous book on the front lines of the television war, a legendary war cameraman on Vietnam. That cameraman being Yasunori Tony Hiroshiki. He and the editor of the book, Terry Irving, were on our show when the book came out several years ago from Casemate. So again, if you want to win the book, play the game. Email me, SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. It's SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. Don't forget, when you email, put down your name and your full mailing address so that if you win, we'll get the prize out to you as soon as possible. And once again, starting on Monday, no matter what, we're going to offer another prize as well. That's the new book, All Good Channels, Queer Images on 20th Century TV by one of our guests on Monday, Stephen Capsudo. He's also the lead historical consultant on the critically acclaimed Apple TV Plus series that came out earlier this winter, Visible, out on television. So in order to win, you got to be in. So do so. And again, all the very best. One more time, here's the question. What 1950s situation comedy series co-starred Natalie Wood, and we'll add on Faye Ray? If you know the answer, SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. And by the way, if we don't get a winner by the end today, we will post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter UBC Simon TWBT. This is UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So do so, and all the very best. And we want to remind you that while you are hunkering down, don't forget that you can catch any of our episodes so far this year and previous years, too, on podcast, and you can binge away all your life. Just go to blogtalkradio.com/televised or go to Apple TV, the Speaker Podcast app, iTunes, TuneInRadio.com at TuneIn.com, and iHeartRadio.com. On TuneIn iHeartRadio, when you go to that website, put Tomorrow We Televised in the search bar, click, and you get our episodes right then and there. And by the way, while you're at it, check out all the other great programming you can find every day on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. And don't forget, TuneIn Radio has the Coronavirus News Channel, keeping you up to date on what is going on with this pandemic from all around the world, plus podcasts and original material. That's the Coronavirus News Channel, 24/7 at TuneIn.com. We come back. Back to the Los Angeles area we go. We'll talk to the director of Netflix's newest series, the Ice Is Just Your Sketch Show, Laura Murphy. She will join us live after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're listening to the best internet radio in the galaxy, www.blogtalkradio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. Together, they serve more than 40 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, tomorrow night, Blog Talk Radio brings you For Your Health with Marsha Tateson. That's For Your Health tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. And remember, Best of BTR always comes your way 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised for this first Friday in April 2020. No fooling, we are here, and we're in service for you. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. If you have questions or comments for our next guest, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. One of the classic genres of television that's been around ever since the early 1950s is the sketch comedy. In fact, Sid Caesar was one of the first practitioners of that art form with first the Animal Broadway Review, and then the classic Your Show of Shows and Caesar's Hour. And in the interim, there have been many, many more on such shows as Saturday Night Live, Mad TV, In Living Color, and so many others. The latest to practice it is the popular comedian Eliza Schlesinger, and her series, The Eliza Schlesinger Sketch Show, premiered this past Wednesday on Netflix. And joining us live from Los Angeles is the director of that show, Laura Murphy. Hello, Laura.
Hi, Simon. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. How have things been going with the show? What kind of feedback are you getting from your viewers?
On Twitter, there's been a lot of great feedback, so that's exciting to read. I love reading all the comments. And, yeah, Eliza has a great fan base to start off with, and so it seems like that her fans are out watching it, which is awesome, and talking about it on Twitter, and then some new people are watching too, which is great.
Eliza has been part of the TV scene in a while. She hosted a game show on TBS a couple of years ago. She's done stand-up comedy specials. At what point did she decide, I want to do something different? And how did she connect with Netflix and then you connect with Netflix to make this sketch show happen?
Well, she's had several specials on Netflix, so she's been working with them for a while. I think she's kind of one of those people who's constantly working and constantly coming up with stuff. She's shot a couple movies. She's written a movie. She was just in the Mark Wahlberg movie. And so I think sketch is something that she's dipped her toe in before and then wanted to come back to, so it made sense to do it with Netflix. And then her and I met initially at like a meeting about the show, and we just hit it off immediately. We have very similar senses of humor. I had done some episodic stuff and narrative, but I really, my beginnings were in promos, actually at MTV. I think, I don't know if Andy and I overlapped, but I started at MTV in New York as well. And so I did Girl Code, and I had a lot of sketch background. So I think we just kind of hit it off, and it made sense. And I loved all the writing, too. The writing for the show was hilarious. So I was excited about jumping on board.
People still finally remember Girl Code. Had a great cast, a lot of fun. It really became a sleeper hit for MTV for several years.
Yeah, it's so funny. Like, when we made that show, I think we knew it was going to be good. I don't think we realized how huge it would be. And I still, one of the shows I'm the proudest of, because there wasn't a voice on television talking to women directly or talking to girls directly in an honest, funny way where there was like a great takeaway. And I think it was time for that. And we just hit it then. And the girls were so funny and so honest, and I think that's why it struck a chord. And I still have people today coming up to me like, oh my God, Girl Code changed my life. I loved Girl Code when I was watching it. So I think I'm really proud of that show. It was so fun. And I'm still in touch with a lot of the girls because we all kind of came up together. Like, a lot of them have gone on and done such huge things, like Awkwafina, Nicole Byer. Like, everybody's out there doing amazing things now. So it's cool that we have that bond that we all kind of started together.
Nicole was on our show several years ago, Laura. She is an outstanding talent. I wish her all the very best. She is just so fun and great, and you know, what you see is what you get, and she is great.
Exactly. She's amazing.
What's the secret for you to doing sketch comedy? What makes a good sketch comedy work?
I mean, the thing that is the most fun about sketch is also the most challenging as a director, I think, which is every piece is its own little movie. Like, when you're doing narrative, you can you can kind of allocate time to certain scenes that are going to have more blocking and more intense stuff. And then you can say, okay, these four pages are just two people talking, so let's shoot this pretty quickly and maybe sacrifice some coverage. You can't do that in Proach. Every single piece within an episode as its own little tiny movie. And that is super fun because you're trying a bunch of different looks and different styles, but it's also challenging when you're on a compressed timeline. So I think for me, the thing from a director's standpoint, the thing about sketch is finding the creative touchstone that you want to use and the inspiration for the look of it that enhances the comedy in it. So, like, obviously some of the sketches in our show are parodies, so that's easy. Like, if we're parodying Jackass, make it look as much like Jackass as possible so people visually get it right away, and it grounds the comedy a little. Like, people don't have to make a visual leap. They're like, okay, I get this. It looks exactly like Jackass that I'm familiar with. But on some of the other sketches where it's not a direct parody, we had license to kind of make the look support the comedy. So, like, there's a sketch that is in the first episode where it's a bunch of executives around the table eating nectarines, and it's absurd, and I love it. I think it was my favorite sketch. But I chose to approach it in a very cinematic look and also a lack of color, because what they're talking about is gibberish, which is kind of satirizing the way conference calls tend to happen sometimes, big business conference calls, and they're all in gray, and we found a gray location, and it was very drab, and the only color that really pops in it are these nectarines on the table. So it kind of signifies, like, something's coming, you don't know what it is, and it adds a little subtle layer of theme to the comedy. And I think that it's really like finding ways that I think the trick is finding ways to visually enhance the comedy without taking away from it. That was a long way to say that. I should have just led with that.
Where does it help that the comedy focuses on a single subject? I understand that most of the sketches on Eliza's show deal with television. Some aspect of television is worth satirizing. Does that make it easier for the writers, for you as a director, to bring a more focused kind of environment to what you're doing?
Yes and no. It's easier in the sense that it's a narrower writer's room in terms of brainstorming and ideas to come up with, and you know where you're, like, you know where the jumping off point is. So I think that helps in shaping a show. I think the challenging part is, so there have been so many parodies of television shows, that the challenge is how do you come at something from a new angle or a different angle that nobody's done before. And also, so much of TV sometimes is already funny without trying, you know, like reality shows are sometimes funny on their own, so you can't satirize them and make parody them because they're already ridiculous. So I think it's challenging to find a good angle to come at stuff to parody it. And the writers did an amazing job. The writers on the show, including Eliza, did a great job at that.
The show we're talking about is the Eliza Schlesinger Sketch Show. It's the new series on Netflix that premiered this past April Fool's Day. No fooling, it's on. And you can currently find it on most smart TV sets and smart TV devices. We've got the director of the show, Laura Murphy, with us live from Los Angeles this half hour. On Tomorrow We'll Be Televised. Simon Amelman with you live from the other side of the US of A. That means New York, 50 degrees at the top of the hour. Happy with us for the program All About Television. We're normally here Mondays and Fridays at this very hour on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and TuneIn Radio. We're also on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Any requests or comments for Laura? Well, don't be shy. Make your voice go at 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And coming up before the top of the hour, before we leave you, we have a show to know. A very interesting episodic hour coming your way on NBC Sunday night that definitely should be worth your while. It's from the series Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist, and it has a very extraordinary special sequence that will tell you all about it. And that's what makes it our show to know. So stay tuned for that. Laura, in the world of sketch comedy, you have shows like Saturday Night Live, like In Living Color, and others, where you have a repertory company that you can play off different sketches among different people. And you had that, of course, experience with Girls Code. In the case of, you also have sketch comedies where you had a star with a repertory company. Sid Caesar's Your Show of Shows, The Tracy Ullman Show, which had a great repertory company working with her. And you have Eliza with her show. What's it like to do a sketch comedy show where you have a star to begin with and you're building the show all around her and her co-stars?
Yeah, I mean, the great thing is Eliza was in the room for the writing from the get-go, so her voice is so present in the show, and she comes up like a lot. Her stand-up has characters and voices in it, so we knew from the beginning, like, Eliza's characters would be there. She came up with so many hilarious characters, and so then it was just a matter of finding a core cast that could elevate it as well. And we were shooting in New York, which was challenging because she's LA based, we're all in LA, but I had done Girl Code in New York and knew a lot of UCB people there, so we kind of tapped into the New York UCB comedy acting scene and worked with a great casting director and just found people that the good thing is we knew what the sketches were when we were casting. I think that helps in the process. If we were just casting funny people without knowing the scripts, it would have definitely been more challenging. But we had the luxury of having finished scripts while we were casting, so we could pick a team of people that made sense with the creative.
Was there a particular subject or character that Eliza wanted to focus on or emphasize on at some point, if not on the first episode, at some point during the six episodes of the series?
Well, there were two real, I mean, the one thing she really felt important about is making sure there were nods in there that were like, that we weren't just catering to a female audience. Obviously, so much of what we, both her and I have worked on is, you know, female forward, empowering to women, but we didn't want to alienate male viewers either, because she has a big male following, and I think that is important. I think that was what Girl Code to me was the touchstone. I always maintained there is it's pro-girl, but it's not anti-male, and I think that we took that even further in this. We were like, we want to make sure there's some content that will keep male viewers interested, and so she was really big on like the Rip Fat Dude sketches and husband wife, like stuff that there's something for male viewers to be like, oh yeah, that strikes a chord with me as well. So that was one thing that was important. Also, this character Cashew Albacore that came out of her brain is hilarious, and that was a character that from the beginning she was like, we're gonna do this, and we knew it's gonna be 7 hours of prosthetics and it's gonna be expensive because it's part of it's on an airplane, but this character is a priority, like we need to put time and resources towards it. And he's kind of like, he looks a little bit like a ship captain, and maybe he's a billionaire. It's just, you have to watch it. It's a hilarious, crazy, weird character that fully came out of Eliza's brain. And she's a trooper for doing 7 hours of hair and makeup.
Was that the most difficult thing for her to adapt to doing something like this, is the fact that you have to do makeup for some of these characters or some of these situations, you have to do makeup or prosthetics or accents or anything like that?
I think that possibly was an adjustment because she isn't used to that. I think the biggest challenge for anybody who has not done a show where they are in every single scene, that's a challenge for anybody. And it's like 20 days to go 20 days for 12 hours every day talking, essentially, is a challenge for anybody. Like, she definitely lost her voice at some point. But I think that's the hardest adjustment that people don't think about when they're going into something like a project like this. It's like, if you're in that many scenes, like even in a movie, you do a couple scenes, you get a break, then you maybe are down for 2 days. She was in every single sketch except for one or two, and she was talking in almost all of them and singing in some. So I think that was the hardest challenge, is just exhaustion and voice stress.
Did you do the series before a live audience?
We were shooting on so many different locations. We shot a lot in Brooklyn, actually, in Ditmas Park. We shot in a lot of houses. We only shot about 6 days, I think, on a stage on sets we built. But no, there was no audience. It was a pretty contained. It was a big crew, but it was a pretty contained shoot, and it was mostly on locations, which was great because then we had the luxury of being able to play around with stuff in the moment, improvise a little, which is what I really like to do, and find moments to make funnier without the pressure of a live audience, where you don't want them to see how, you know, you don't want them to see how things work in the behind the scenes and the boring, tedious part of finding a moment. And so we had the luxury of being able to do that and up the funny while we were shooting.
Somebody destroyed our chat room, by the way. So I'm Apple04 by name. Welcome aboard. You have a question or a comment for Laura? Put it in the room and make the call. 646-652-2906. Where did you shoot in New York? What were some of the locations that you used?
We shot at a lot of houses in, I think it's Dartmouth Park. Is that right? Is that where there's all those, like, big houses that don't look at all like Brooklyn?
Yeah, that's certainly it.
I'd say we shot 99% of it in Brooklyn. We never left Brooklyn. I think we were in Queens for one day maybe. But, yeah, it was cool. It was great to be able to shoot in Brooklyn. When I lived in New York, I never got to do there.
Incidentally, if Eliza gets a second season, Netflix is going to be launching at some point a six-studio complex in Brooklyn, in Williamsburg.
Oh, well, that'll be convenient. That'll make everything easier.
Absolutely. No, Brooklyn has really become, in the last couple of years, it's become the new Hollywood. A lot of shows were done there. A lot of the Marvel shows that Netflix had done, such as Jessica Jones won the Peabody Award, and Daredevil, et cetera, were shot in Brooklyn. And some of the other shows, Younger, the Sutton Foster show out of TV Land, shot in Brooklyn for the most part. So it's a super borough, along with the other four boroughs of the city.
Yeah, it was great. It was kind of like being on a back lot because our production offices were on a block with several other stages and other productions were going. So I kept bumping into people I had worked with on other shows. It was cool. It's like, yeah, it was really fun. I enjoyed shooting in Brooklyn.
Before you broke into sketch comedy, did you see any of the classic shows, whether it was Sid Caesar, your show of shows, or Living Color, or Saturday Night Live, or Tracy's show, or other classic sketch shows, to sort of get a feel for the art, get a feel for how other people directed this kind of program?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I remember as a kid, I think my parents got me like a Carol Burnett box set or something. Like, I remember watching a bunch of Carol Burnett, which was really sketch comedy, even though it was variety too, and being obsessed with it. And I don't think like I knew what directing was then, but I loved that form of comedy. And obviously, like, Saturday Night Live was a huge part of my childhood growing up. I was obsessed with it. And continued to love sketch. I don't think I ever thought I started as a writer, so I always wanted to write in comedy. I kind of ended up directing. I guess in retrospect, I was always on that path, but I never thought about it. But I loved Dave Chappelle. I love Key and Peele, Amy Schumer. Like, I'm a huge sketch comedy fan, and I think probably it started with Carol Burnett. I've done now more paying attention to the technical aspects of it once I started directing and watching things for the direction and the look of it as opposed to just for humor. So it takes a little of the joy out of it sometimes because I'm watching a lot of stuff from a filmmaker standpoint as opposed to just a viewer. But I've always loved sketch.
Yeah, me too. And something that you just raised is that Carol's show was also as much variety as it was sketch comedy. And a lot of the great classic variety shows also had plenty of sketch comedy, whether it was the Andy Williams show or the Gary Moore show, which I'm happy to say some of the episodes of that series, which was done out of New York, which Carol Burnett got her first fame in TV on, are on YouTube. So you can the Colgate Comedy Hour, you know, back in the early 1950s, where you had Abbott and Costello and Eddie Cantor and Bob Hope. Doing also the Three Stooges doing comedy routines on television. Ed Sullivan, you know, one of the great variety shows of all time, did a lot of sketch comedy.
Yeah, it's funny. People think sketch and only think like the classics, like we said, like SNL. But really, even those comedic moments with more than one person in them that are just cutaways from other shows are truly sketch. Like anything where there's multiple people playing in a scene. And it is really sketch. So, yeah, you can find sketch everywhere. It's great.
What are some of the satire subjects that you have coming up in future episodes?
Well, the second episode has a great, which is one of my other favorite sketches. It's called Getting Better, but it's like a support group meeting for women who have high self-esteem. And then the leader of the group is trying to knock their self-esteem down and remind them that high self-esteem can sometimes be deemed as a threat, which is brilliantly written. And I think it does a great job of really, I mean, that's my favorite kind of satire where there's a joke, but the subtext of it is a message, but you don't feel like you're getting hit over the head with it. So that I think was, and I think there's a lot of subtle messaging around women and how women treat each other and women empowerment that I think the writing was just so well done in that. And it's because Eliza's really like that as well. It's like pro-woman without feeling like you're getting a message get shoved down your throat. And I think that's what I always liked about Girl Code as well. So there's definitely hints of that throughout the season. But there's also some that are just hilarious and weird that don't have any message. And that's great.
Mm-hmm. Did I hear correctly that there's also a sketch about home renovation shows or home makeover shows that you would see or shows you would see on certain networks like Home and Garden Television or cooking shows on Food Network or Cooking Channel, DIY, et cetera?
Yep. Yeah, there's a lot of home shopping networks. There's a couple of those. A crafting show that's very much like a PBS Create or a type show. And there's a couple little the premise of the whole show is that there's like a menu and there's several thumbnails of fake shows within the thumbnail. And that's kind of the format, the packaging around it. So there's also some sketches that are just little 3-second blips of fake shows. So there is one that's very much like a home improvement show with a guy who's trying to fix a toilet that there's a couple little 3-second snippets of. And Eliza does several characters that are in Home Shopping Network or in like the crafting, like a little bit of a crafting woman who's on the edge of possibly a nervous breakdown, which is pretty hilarious.
One more thing before we go. You know, many of the great variety shows also had spinoffs. The Carol Burnett Show spun off Mama's Family. Tracy Ullman's show, The Simpsons, of course, one of the longest running shows of all time. Do you see the possibility of Eliza's show spinning off a regular weekly series for her?
I mean, that would be great. I think I feel like Cashew Albacore should get his own show at some point because it's such a crazy character. I don't know if Eliza wants to do 7 hours of hair and makeup every day for a show, but that character won my heart over. So I would love to see that. That would be awesome.
The Eliza Schlesinger Sketch Show is now on Netflix. If you have a smart TV set or smart TV, chances are it's available to you right now. And remember, for more details about the show online, here's where you go, www.netflix.com. It's www.netflix.com. The Eliza Schlesinger Sketch Show, produced in my neighborhood, in my area, Brooklyn, New York, a great place to shoot a television show. And hopefully, sooner than later, we'll get back production as soon as this coronavirus situation collapses, and we hope it does very, very soon, on both coasts, by the way, New York and L.A. Lauren Rippey, director of the series, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations to you and Eliza and everybody else on making it happen. Hopefully, the beginning of a great long run on Netflix, and it's been a delight to have you with us.
Thanks so much, Simon. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Lauren. Take care. All the greatest. Enjoy the weekend.
You too. Thanks. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Stay safe. Lauren Murphy, director of the Eliza Schlesinger Sketch Show on Netflix, joining us live from Los Angeles. Now, before we leave you and get you going for the weekend, here's our regular feature we call Show You Know. It's where we highlight a program that is worth your while watching. You might not know about it because it's not well marketed, promoted, publicized, or it falls under the critics and journalist radar screen. Well, in this case, we have an episode coming Sunday night on NBC of a series that's been getting a lot of attention over the last few weeks. It's called Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. It's a series starring Jane Levy, created by Austin Winberg. It's about a woman who hears the thoughts of people in song and dance and then pops up in a very unique way. Well, this Sunday night, the latest episode happens on NBC. It's called Zoe's Extraordinary Silence. And here's why it's unique. Because it combines a plot line and a unique dance number organized by members of a group called Deaf West Theater Company. It's a group of deaf and hard of hearing actors, singers, dancers based in Los Angeles. It's a marvelous group. And one of the actors, his name is Sandra Mae Frank, gets a plot line in it. But the most important thing is they actually do a number that dance in sign language. It's done to the Rachel Platten hit song Fight Song, and Deaf West does it under the choreography of Mandy Moore. Not the Mandy Moore you know as This Is Us as co-star, but the acclaimed choreographer who's won Emmys for her work on So You Think You Can Dance, Dancing with the Stars, and in my opinion, should have got an honorary Oscar a couple of years ago for La La Land. Remember that great, great opening number on the L.A. freeway at rush hour? That itself should have gotten her the Oscar. Anyway, Mandy, I've seen the number. It's really terrific. It's done in sign language, no subtitles, with the song. It's really, really great. That's a very unique use of a troupe that is really trying to break through in terms of how the deaf and hard of hearing are portrayed in theater, on television, all over the place. And it's the next milestone in terms of showing deaf and hard of hearing people on television. And it's a great time to do so because a few weeks ago, we had Susanna Stern, who we had this program a couple of years ago with another project, that she became a regular on Grey's Anatomy, the first deaf actress to have a role where she plays someone deaf, a deaf nurse, on that long-running ABC series. Again, the episode is called Zoe's Extraordinary Silence, part of Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist, this Sunday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on NBC. Check below the NBC station in the area. More details at NBC.com. I promise you, it'll be a very special viewing experience. Now, is there a TV show you like that you feel doesn't get enough attention? Well, we'd like to give it the attention on this program, but we've got to hear from you. And if we do, you get the credit for it. So email me with your thoughts for a show to know at SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. It's SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. Again, close your name and where you're emailing from. Remember, that's how you get involved. That's your question as well. So if you have a show to know, don't delay. Email me, SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. And guess what? Maybe down the road, your show to know might be our show to know on a future episode. Again, I want to thank both of our guests for being here and all of you for tuning in. And again, we wish you the greatest this weekend and beyond. And let's pull through and be in this together. And we will lick this coronavirus pandemic. Again, coming up on Tomorrow We Televise next week, 2 90-minute episodes for you. First up on Monday, we will have Kyle Hunter, Ariel Sheffer, and Ben Carlin, all from the Hulu popular series Future Man. From All of Paradise, which made this past Monday on WGN Network, executive producer Dean Devlin, and the writer of the new book, Alternative Channels, Queer Images on 20th Century Television, Stephen Capsudo, who is also the lead historical consultant on the recent acclaimed Apple TV Plus series, Visible Out on Television. And then next Friday, we'll have Nancy Pertwine from the new smart TV programming service, Players TV. We'll have Michelle Collins and Kevin Dill from Wayne Brady's County IQ, just recently premiering on, will premiere, I should say, this coming week on BYU TV. And from Danger Force, creator executive producer of that Nickelodeon series, the Heavy Danger spinoff, Christopher Nowak. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast anytime like this weekend. It's there all over the place at iTunes, Apple TV, Spreaker Podcast App, TuneIn.com, and iHeartRadio.com. We'd love to hear from you. What do you think about our show today? And what's your thoughts about where TV is at and where it's going? Email me, SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook at Simon Applebaum. Follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. Whatever you think about TV, we respond within 24 hours. Why? Because what you say matters. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants. Not only does the Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, and iHeartRadio. Our production associate, BTR, Candace Williams. Andy Tillis, Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Sondler, executive content producer. Co-founders of BTR, Al Levy, and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow we'll be televised, brought to you by Audible.com, an Amazon company. Remember, Audible transformed the way you hear the world. For 3 free audiobooks, 1 month trial, audibletrial.com/televised. For Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great and safe weekend. We're back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune Radio, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. And please, follow the guidelines. Let's pull through this together. We're licking this. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.